After they separate from a spouse or partner, most people expend considerable effort protecting their financial situation. People want to protect what they have, either for themselves or for their children. They also do not want their exes to get more than necessary. Everyone wants their own money that they can use or give away free from interference. After separation, nearly everyone is very careful in organizing their finances, but often they are not careful in organizing their finances if they die. And that can mean that even after a long fight, a former spouse can get way more than he or she would have gotten through the family court just because the other spouse has died. That can even be at the expense of the children. In this episode of the Ontario Family Law Podcast, I will explain what you have to do to keep your ex from getting everything if you die after separation and to ensure your inheritance goes where you want it to go. I'm John Schumann, Certified Specialist in Family Law in Ontario. I'm also a mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer. This podcast is a companion to my book, Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available on the iBookstore, Amazon, Kobo, and in fine bookstores. In other episodes of this podcast, I have explained how you can keep your wealth for yourself after separation. In this episode of the podcast, I will explain how to protect your wealth for your heirs should you die after separation. Unfortunately, bad things happen and often former spouses are very happy to take advantage of them. After a married couple separates, each partner should make it a priority to create a will. Separation does not automatically void a will. A spouse's will remains valid until the first of the following five events. First, the spouses have lived separate and apart for 3 years. Second, the divorce takes effect. Third, the spouses sign a separation agreement. Fourth, there's a court order addressing the issues arising from the separation. Or fifth, there's a family arbitration award addressing the issues arising from the separation.
Oh.
A separated spouse with a will who left most or all of his or her estate to his or her former partner may want to change those provisions after separating.
Ah.
Until one of the five events I just mentioned occur, a separated spouse is still giving his or her ex everything that the will sets out.
Oh.
It may be even more important for a spouse without a will to make one, especially where that spouse has children. Where a separated spouse dies without a will and without children, his or her surviving spouse is entitled to all of the deceased assets.
Oh, yeah.
Until one of those same five events I just described that would void the will occurs.
Hmm.
So the ex gets everything, even if the ex would have gotten nothing in family court. When a separated spouse dies without a will but has children, his or her surviving spouse gets the first $350,000 in the deceased spouse's estate, and the rest is divided between the spouse and the children.
Oh.
Where there is one child, the spouse gets the first $350,000 and then shares the rest equally with the child. Where there is more than one child, the spouse gets the first $350,000 and gets one-third of any additional amounts, while the children or the children's children share the remaining two-thirds equally between them. When a spouse dies, his or her property is divided in this way until any of those events take place that would have avoided a spouse's will. To go over it again, those events are a divorce, 3 years of separation, a separation agreement, a court order, or an arbitration award. After one of those events, the spouse of a deceased does not get anything automatically.
No!
Instead, the deceased's estate is distributed to his or her nearest biological relatives. There is another possible wrinkle. Anyone who holds property as joint tenants with his or her former partner should also contact a lawyer to sever the joint tenancy.
Why don't you have your lawyer call my lawyer?
If the partner dies while the property is still registered as a joint tenancy, the deceased's interest in that property will automatically transfer to the other joint tenant. At the end of a relationship, a person may not want to give that interest in property to a former partner, but may want to transfer to his or her other heirs pursuant to a will. That can only be accomplished by severing the joint tenancy. This applies to not only homes and land, but also to joint bank accounts and other joint assets. If someone dies shortly after separation, unless there is a will in place that reflects the separation and the joint ownership of any assets has been terminated, the deceased married spouse will get the bulk of the deceased's wealth.
Oh, yeah.
So it's important to speak to an estate lawyer shortly after separation to redirect that wealth where the deceased wants it to go, probably to the deceased's loved ones. I will go over an example to illustrate how badly things can work out if there is not a proper will in place. Let's consider the situation of a fictionally separated couple, Desmond and Molly. Molly is a well-paid professional. Desmond was a stay-at-home dad to the party's two now-grown children. Desmond and Molly own their house jointly. In addition, Molly has some retirement savings. Desmond and Molly were separated for 2 years when Molly was struck by a trolley and died. However, they have not finalized their separation agreement, and since they were still negotiating, they have not gone to court. The entire house became Desmond's because they still held title jointly when Molly died.
Oh, yeah.
Molly also has her savings, of which there is still $410,000 left after the estate taxes. Desmond automatically gets $350,000 from Molly's estate. As Desmond and Molly had a couple of kids, Desmond gets one-third of the remaining $60,000, or $20,000, and the kids share the other $40,000. So Desmond gets the entire house, and a total of $370,000. If Molly had not died, Desmond would have received half the value of the house, and only $205,000.
Oh.
It is important to note that all of these rules I just went over apply to married spouses. Common law partners do not get anything automatically unless they get it through a will, or through a joint tenancy. This is another important distinction between living common law and being married. I've gone over the other differences in previous episodes. The only way a common law couple spouse inherits from his or her partner is if there is a will or a joint tenancy. Further, the gifts in a will to a common law partner remain valid for as long as the will remains in force.
Oh, yeah.
So when a common law couple separates, each partner must change his or her will to cut out his or her ex. Although cutting off a former common law partner entirely may not work out if that partner was still a dependent of the deceased when he or she died. When a parent, married spouse, or common law spouse dies, that person's dependents can make a claim for support against the estate. A child, married spouse, or common law spouse of someone who has died can make such a claim if he or she did not receive an adequate amount from the estate to meet his or her ongoing needs. The payment of that support can take priority over the distribution of the assets in the estate. For that reason, after separation, a spouse or common law partner will want to speak to an estate lawyer about how best to make gifts to loved ones to prevent these types of claims. This is also why it is common for separation agreements and court support orders to include requirements for support payers to keep life insurance. That life insurance looks after the ongoing needs of the dependents and allows the estate to be distributed as set out in the will. I will continue the example to show why this is important. Desmond was not satisfied with receiving all but the $40,000 that was in Molly's estate. As he stayed home to raise the kids, he feels he should have gotten everything. Since he was still dependent on Molly when she died, and since the kids are grown and are no longer dependent, Desmond can make a claim against the estate for support in the amount that remains in the estate, namely $40,000. That means the kids will get nothing from their mother, Molly. Another consideration for parents who have parenting responsibilities for their children or unmarried parents is that it is possible for them to appoint a guardian for the children for the first 90 days after their death. This allows a parent with parenting time and decision-making responsibilities to direct with whom the children will live during their parenting time until the court has the opportunity to make a parenting order with respect to the children. Such a provision in a will can be very important if the surviving parent did not have any parenting time or parenting responsibilities, particularly if the court felt that the parent should not have had them with respect to a child. In the separation process, it is not only important to consider your immediate needs and the future needs of yourself and the children, but also to make plans to ensure that what happens if you die meets your expectations and protects your family, especially your children. If you need some more general family law guidance, or you need to understand Ontario family law better so you can make better decisions, if you need to know the best parenting options after separation, or if you need to better understand how finances work after separation or divorce, or if you need some tips for how best to make these difficult types of decisions, get a copy of my book, Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law. You can access it immediately on the iBookstore, on Amazon for the Kindle version, or you can download it from Kobo. Amazon can deliver the paperback version directly to your doorstep. You can also get a lot more Ontario family law information on www.schumannlaw.ca. Not only are there hundreds of pages of family law information and links, but there are links to get my book and links to reach my office to meet with either me or one of my colleagues. Because it's always best to get a lawyer who can give you expert advice that's specific to your situation. In addition to my website, keep up to family law and children's law issues by liking my Facebook page, following me on Twitter at @SchumannFamLaw, and following me on LinkedIn. Of course, please subscribe to my YouTube channel and hit the notification bell to keep up to date. You can also get the audio versions of the Ontario Family Law podcast on all major podcast services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. They are also available at www.schumannlaw.ca. Thanks for participating in this podcast. We will get together again soon.